Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
The following podcast is a member of the Great Big Owl family.
Hello, and welcome back to the Keith Cheggers podcast. I'm Hannah Norris, I'm your host, and I'm here with my husband.
Carl Donnelly.
Yeah.
Your co-host.
Yeah, my sidekick. And this is a podcast about pregnancy. We've started releasing these episodes, so we've been recording them throughout the whole course of my pregnancy up to this date. So if you do want to get in touch with us, you can find us on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. That's all at CheggersPod. And you can email us at Gmail, CheggersPod@gmail.com.
Yeah, that is it.
Yeah. Yes. And then you can get through to us if you'd like to send through any questions or thoughts.
Yeah.
Or what else, Carl?
Tips. Advice.
Yes.
I mean, that's what we started this for.
Yeah. Because we're currently at week 20 of my pregnancy, which is halfway through, supposedly.
Yeah.
And this is our 15th episode of this. So being at the halfway point, we have a very special guest with us today. she's flown all the way from Australia just to do this. And she's actually here. She's an actor performing at Soho Theatre coming up very soon from the 17th to the 22nd of February in a show called After You. And her name is Angela Norris, and she's my mom.
Good morning, Hannah and Hi. Carl.
Hi, Mum.
Hello, mother-in-law.
Isn't this exciting?
Welcome to your first podcast.
Yes, it's your first ever podcast.
Well, yes. I've never seen one done either, with all these microphones and sitting on high stools.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're giving away the magic, but the behind-the-scenes magic.
Well, you've got to sort of open some doors, don't you? You're opening plenty of doors.
Hey.
We might have to change the stool situation as you get further along. Just realise these stools are actually quite difficult for the heavily pregnant lady.
Carl did tell me that the two of you were looking at nursing chairs yesterday.
That's right.
Yes.
Yes.
Oh, I'd not even thought about it. And then I obviously picked your mum up from the airport. Mm-hmm. And on the drive back, we got chatting about pregnancy stuff.
We did.
And you told me about your pregnancy
chair,
nursing chair.
Well, I had this wonderful chair that I could sit in that had two very wide arms, so you could put biscuits on one side, because if you wake up in the middle of the night, you need to eat an arrowroot biscuit or something like that, just to calm your nerves, to feed you, so you've got the supply coming through.
Yeah.
It was very comfortable, and then you could fall asleep if you wanted to. Nursing.
Which one? What chair? I don't remember. There was that wicker cane chair.
No, there were two big armchairs that came from your dad's flat.
Yeah.
And they were very comfortable. They were pretty low.
Yeah.
But it meant that when you came along and you had your friend Emma there when you're about two or three, you would jump and jump and jump to the point that the springs just came through. So there was a bit like a mini trampoline. We did get rid of them after a while.
But that was your nursing chair?
Yes.
Right. And that it was handy because you could put biscuits on it. And is it good because it's lowered down? Is that
well? It was comfortable. You weren't very far off the floor, but you didn't want to be too low because, getting down and having to hold a baby.
Yeah.
Yes. I saw one on an antiques website yesterday. Mm. Obviously, naturally, straight
Carl,
away.
That's Carl's vibe.
I start looking at old ones. I found a Victorian one.
Oh, yes.
It might have even been earlier than that. It was, we're talking like 150.
A two-year-old would jump on it how many times before it broke?
Oh, I mean, it looked amazing from the first picture, which was quite a distant photo.
Yeah.
And then on a closer inspection, it hadn't been reupholstered in like 150 years. Yeah. And it was an absolute state.
So like, again, you could get baby sick all over it. You could really
I looked at some new ones. There's actually new ones that are affordable and look really useful. And they've actually got everything you need. They've got pockets and things that you can put stuff.
like a saddlebag on a bike.
Yeah, they were on both arms.
Perfect.
So, yeah, so you could literally have everything
so
you
many
need.
Biscuits.
Yeah.
Yes.
And bottles of water or glasses of water.
Yeah. Yes.
Keep your fluids up.
Not gin and tonics.
No.
I've already given away the fact that you got gin and tonic brought to you in hospital.
I heard about that.
Yeah. So when was it? It was before you gave birth to me?
Well, I sort of remember it being four because I had to go in about 10 to 12 days before you were born because you were a little person already causing grief. Not really. No, you were transverse and only about 5% do that positioning. So we knew you were going to be special.
Yes.
And you still are.
But that's why you had to go in 10 to 12 days before because that's transverse means that I was sideways.
Well, yes.
And I wasn't going to turn around.
No, just right up above the sort of top of the placenta, wherever, underneath the boobs. So breathing was really difficult. Moving was really difficult.
Was I kicking your lungs and things
like that?
I've
no idea what you were kicking.
But I was kicking things.
Oh, yes. Going to be a ballet dancer or a footballer?
I am neither of those things.
No.
I tried ballet for a bit. I remember trying ballet when I was about four or five.
You didn't like that because you had to stand in a certain position, have your arms in a certain position. You had to do what you were told.
Yeah, I remember there was like I wasn't allowed to do the dancing bit until I could do a position.
Oh, it was awful. It was
stupid.
Yes.
Ballet sucks.
No, it doesn't. I love ballet because when I was about four, I danced with a famous ballerina who went on to be famous with a Saddler's Well. Lynn Seymour.
See, she's a famous.
I know. Famous.
I didn't know about that. That one's not in our show.
Oh, well, there you go.
Put that in. So famous. So yeah, at the halfway mark, Carl, do you remember what kind of fruit or vegetable it is, size it is right now?
Hang on, what was it last time?
I can't remember.
Was it courgette last time?
Yeah.
So courgette, I reckon this time it is a turnip. No.
What about a cucumber?
Could be a cucumber.
Yeah, this is a cucumber.
Small butternut squash.
No, it's a Belgian endive.
Oh.
Endive.
Endive.
Oui.
It's like a lettuce. I reckon it's sort of like a cos lettuce.
Okay.
That sort of size.
Yes.
So it's 10 inches long.
Oh my word.
Gosh.
Which is long.
Yes.
And apparently at this point now, until now, the baby gets measured from the crown to the rump.
Yes.
Head to bum. But now it's head to toe.
Ooh.
But I don't think it's stretched out 10. I'm probably not even 10 inches wide.
No, you're petite.
I reckon you're about 10 inches
wide. Hey,
shut up. No, but I reckon, but babies never just stretch out. They never do a full-on Superman pose, do they?
I don't know. Apparently now is when they start practicing stretching and things like that. Doing punching and kicking and all those sorts of things. So over the last week, over this week, we've had two scans.
Yes.
Because we had to go back in to the premature clinic to see how, over the last week, how my cervix is going. So I've been on progesterone for the last week and we went back in and it has lengthened slightly.
Yeah, a few millimetres.
Yeah, so it had been at 3 centimetres and it had shortened to 2.5 centimetres, which is why they got concerned and put me on progesterone. And now it's at 2.7 centimetres. And so we're going back again on Monday to check that to see if it's still lengthening. And if it does, then hopefully that will be fine and I won't have to have a stitch put in to stop the baby from falling out early.
Oh, that's what they were afraid you'd do. When I was put in earlier, yes, they thought maybe a leg would come dangling out or something.
So really?
So they'd better go in, lie down so you're under control, yes.
A leg come dangling
out? Well, I don't know. Something like that.
Yeah, that's probably what was going to happen.
I didn't know all this stuff.
No, well, I mean, neither we're learning, but that's...
Yeah, I never learned anything.
Didn't you?
No.
What did you know about pregnancy then?
Not very much at all because I don't read books like you two do.
Yeah.
Just would go to the clinic. I was in the geriatric section because I was 32.
I'm geriatric.
Yeah, but in those days, 32 was geriatric and we would be isolated, I suppose.
We?
Yes, put away from all these young things. We're about 18, 20s. Yes, because we might catch something.
This is back in 1979, just so everybody knows.
Yes, back in the 70s.
I was alive for 19 days in the 70s.
Yes.
And you're still alive.
How many decades is that you've been part of?
What was it, 70s, 80s, 90s, 2000? I mean, it's my sixth decade.
You're in your 60s then.
Yeah. Oh, really? I think that's so funny.
I find it so funny. I'm married to somebody who's 6 decades old.
Yeah.
I'm in my ninth decade, aren't I?
Yeah, something 73.
Like gosh.
You're probably a centurion, just about.
Almost.
Yeah, so you'd get put in isolation to keep you old.
Well, yes, we were told different things, which wasn't much that I can remember. But then you get baby brain, you can't remember much, really, when you're expecting.
I think I'm all right at the moment.
I've
been busy. I've been having to remember a lot of stuff.
Yes.
And I've been managing to do that.
And you've locked yourself out.
That was ages ago, and
that's still part of baby brain.
Yeah, I know. I think, you know, in that early stage when you were just super tired,
you
could see that that you're probably, you know, had a lot to think about in a time when your brain probably and your body was so exhausted. I think I've not noticed any difference at all mentally.
So my stomach's popping out.
I mean, physically now in this last, I'd say the last week, it has gone crazy.
Yeah.
Expanding.
Yeah. So it's a bump now.
Like you bought them maternity trousers, you bought leggings. Like that have the over bump thing.
Yeah.
It
looks like I'm about 9 months pregnant.
Yeah, it does. I think you were pushing it out.
I wasn't pushing it. I'm trying not to hold it in. I'm still doing that thing because I know that usually I just hold my stomach in, I think, when I walk around.
So do I.
Being a lady. So just having to release that and relax it a bit is, it's not pushing it out. It's just relaxing it out, I think.
Yes.
Do you remember, did you have morning sickness with me? I've got a brother as well. So there's two of us. Sorry, Stephen.
Well, there was another one before you were due.
Yes, that's what I wanted to ask you about as well.
Nauseous with that one, and I felt a little bit with you, but with Steve and I actually threw up.
Yeah, right.
So there were ebbs and flows, feeling yuck.
Yeah, so you did, before I was born, you did have a miscarriage.
Yes.
And I've always known that, and that that you would call the baby Leo.
Correct. Because due in August.
Yeah, it was due in August. So in my mind, I've only just realized now, since being pregnant, I always have imagined Leo, that it was a boy. And the idea of you having a miscarriage, I imagined you being fully pregnant and then it just went away. But that's not the case, is it?
No, it was horrible. We're in Australia on holidays.
How early was it?
It was sort of 12 to 16 weeks. I'm not really sure.
Yeah, right. So in the early days.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, yes, yeah. But it was so painful. Horrible.
Was it?
Yes.
What do you...
Well, we'd been to a picnic at Hanging Rock Place in Victoria and been climbing over rocks and things like that. And it was around the Australia Day long weekend.
Yeah.
And just terrible pains. I don't remember. Well, they probably were worse when I was giving birth, but then there was intervention.
Yeah.
But yes, it was just horrible. Doubled over with pain and bleeding and everything.
And that was at Hanging Rock?
No. There was a bit of spotting, but I thought I'd eaten too much beetroot.
Really?
Yes.
Had you been eating a lot of beetroot? Okay.
And did you then go straight to hospital or what was the...
No, I was at home. Didn't go to a doctor or anything. And then they thought, I was staying with Mum and Dad and Mike would sort of think, we better take you off somewhere. So I can't remember if I went in an ambulance or was just driven to some private clinic. I can't remember. I think we visited a doctor when I was out there initially just to check because I'd only just discovered doing that thing with the stick and the wee and what have you. Yes.
So you found out you were pregnant in Australia?
No, just before we left.
Oh, right. Yeah.
And I did feel nauseous on the plane because where we sat, all the cooking smells made me want to throw up. So I didn't particularly like that.
No.
And then met up with friends and quite a few of them were pregnant, so I was part of the club and thought, this is so exciting. And then
No drinking?
I can't remember. It's a long time ago.
Yeah.
Hmm.
And then it was... How long was your trip to Australia?
I think we were away 6 weeks. We had to extend it another week because I had the miscarriage in hospital. And I can remember being taken back to Mum and Dad's and it was Australia Day weekend and we had sort of flowers and there was an Australia Day flag and feeling really sad. Because I'd lost what I was expecting, which I didn't know I was going to have anyway.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah, that is...
That's life. Had it gone full term, you wouldn't have been here.
That's right.
So it was meant to be that happened. Otherwise, you wouldn't be here.
I think there's a term for it now because it's like rainbow babies is what people call it. It's like, I think Well, I actually don't know. I just know there's a hash. People talk about rainbow babies, and I think that's after you've had a miscarriage when you have a baby.
Oh, it's a bit like dogs going over the rainbow bridge when you lose your dog.
Yes,
I do. When you go over there and you're eventually greeted at the end, all these dogs are going to be there to say, hello, I remember you.
It is. I've just Googled it. It says a rainbow baby is a term for a child born to a couple who have previously lost a child due to miscarriage, stillbirth or death during infancy. These subsequent pregnancies can bring strong feelings of anxiety, guilt and even fear, which I mean, Hannah causes you those constantly, still. Even currently.
Never, no. All the expectations were put onto her, and they still are.
Yes.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah, that's why I knew I had to do a podcast, otherwise I never would have made it in my parents' eyes. Been badgering me for years.
No, never.
That's just really it. I realised that I hadn't really figured that out in my head, and it's the same. So the show that Mum and I are doing together, After You, is quite, we've talked about a lot of stuff. Yes. From our own lives in that, and actually working on the show was the first time we talked about babies. Do you remember, have we ever talked about it before?
No.
That day in the rehearsal room?
No, I don't remember that much either.
No.
That I am getting old.
No, but that was, I knew that it was something I wanted to talk to you about because I never had, and I was getting to that age where either it was going to happen or it wasn't going to be part of my life. You're not one of those people who had strong, like, you must give me a grandchild. I need to be a grandparent, do you?
I've seen my friends who are grandparents. Oh.
What's that?
Well, they don't have any free time for a start.
Yeah.
They're constantly picking up children at play group or school, taking them to swimming and all sorts of other activities. And I thought, oh, poor things, they don't have a life.
Yeah.
And they're all so tired.
So you're happy to have your own life.
Well, yes.
Yeah. Plus, we're going to be across the other side of the world from each other. So.
Which is very sad, actually, now that I'm near here with you and see the bump.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. But you also don't have the hassle of having to look after a child.
Well, I'd quite like to. I like them more when they're at the toddler stage and we're doing finger painting and activities like that. Yeah. Not the crying, pick you up, you're still not going to sleep or lying down, which happened.
Yeah. Not too fussed about the baby bit. But you are going to come. I mean, the thing I suggested, I was like, do you think you and Dad want to come out after I've had the baby to meet them?
Of course.
You were like, oh yeah.
Yeah.
I think your dad wants to be here. He definitely wants to be here.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, I think I've said on a previous episode, I think he's been a grandfather in waiting for quite a long time.
Yes.
Mum just rolled her eyes when I said that.
That's because he's been a great uncle for a long time.
Nearly
50
he?
Years or more. So, yes, he's always expected his turn as a grandfather.
Yeah. I had to, so it's his turn. It's coming up. Along with the premature scan that we had this week, we also had our 20-week scan.
Yes.
Oh. So that's the big one. That's where they measure everything. It's quite like she's going through and going, oh, yeah, there's the left arm. You can see, yep, there's the forearm, there's the right arm, there's five fingers, there's five fingers. So you can't, I had that feeling of expectation each time we're finding a new limb going, is it going to be there? Oh, it's there,
there,
cool.
Yeah.
It's weird, isn't it? And the organs as well, because they really go through every element of the little human that's building.
Definitely. And also comes from the lack of knowledge and understanding, or, you know, I genuinely thought that 20-week scan was more for us to see it at 20 weeks.
Yeah.
I thought it'd be, she'd be going, oh, there's your baby. But actually it was much more us just sitting back while she measured things.
Yeah, for a long time. And then I had to go for a walk because the baby wouldn't turn around and the sonographer needed to measure the heartbeat.
Oh.
So I had to go for a 15-minute walk, and we walked around Wormwood Scrubs prison
around
the outside.
Oh, that's good.
And jiggled around a lot, and then when we came back, the baby had turned over and could see the heartbeat and get all those readings. And part of that was also we had the opportunity to find out the gender if we wanted to.
Oh.
Now I've been like, I'm not fussed really about knowing, but
do I need
Carl
a tissue?
I don't know.
But yeah, I wasn't like dead set, like I have to know, but just a few people we've talked to, and it's people we've talked to on here, like Tanya Edwards is a good example of somebody who, you know, she just said that it really helped her, knowing the sex really helped her build an idea of the little person in them, her mind, so she could start. So if it was a boy, she'd be like thinking, I'm going to start thinking about getting to know my son. And actually, once she's put it in those terms, I was like, that's actually a really, that appeals to me, I think.
Yeah. And I wasn't fussed until kind of the day when it was leading up to it, and I got really excited about the idea of finding out what it is. So we haven't told Mum yet.
No. So is it Gary or Sherry? Or more like a Sherry, probably.
Well, I've said I would call a girl Gary as well.
I know. All right.
Yeah.
Gary Abella.
So, yeah, it's a girl.
Oh, that's wonderful. Oh, I do need a tissue.
I'm going to get Mum a tissue because she's crying a little bit.
Yes. Did you have any instincts as to what it would be?
Well, inside me, I was hoping to be a little girl.
Yeah. Well, it's because I genuinely don't or didn't have a preference. But I think we talked about it, and I feel like there was a little tiny part of me that was sort of thinking, oh, it would be really nice to have a little girl.
It's nice having a girl first.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because they're so gentle and thoughtful, exactly it, I think. And kind and loving.
The boys can be all those things as well.
Yes.
Of course.
Yes.
But
they can also be a bit more punchy.
Well, I think everyone I know from who's raised kids and have got kids now that are into a bit older say, you know, it's a bit of a stereotype, but boys are harder in the first 10 years. Girls are amazing. Like they're like lovely for the first 10 years. But then teenage years, girls, because they become, you might worry more about them than you would a boy.
Yes.
That just, the sort of the balance shifts. So your anxieties are much higher for boys when they're young, and but it flips around in the teens.
Well, with a boy, you just worry about one penis, but with a girl, you worry about a million.
About every single one in the world.
Well, one of the things I read is that if it's a girl, which she is, she already has 7 million eggs in her ovaries.
Oh, my word.
So there's that thing that my grandchild is in there. This is this thing that does my head in every time I try to figure it out.
What if she doesn't want to have kids?
Yeah, fine.
Stop putting pressure on our daughter at this stage.
Or her daughter.
I carried my grandchild. You will have one. So that's cool. And along with that, though, we got to the end of the scan.
Oh, dear.
Because she was like, the way she told us was like, do you want to know the gender? We went, yeah. And she said, well, it looks like a girl. Like, cool, she said, because there's nothing between the legs.
Yeah.
And Carlos was like, could be a boy with no dick.
Oh, yes.
I mean, yeah.
But who knows these days?
Yeah, I think it's a girl. So we got to the end of the scan and she was printing things out. And then she just started staring at the screen and was like, I don't understand what's happening.
Oh.
And she kept asking about the dates.
Yeah. Have you got the date, like, because we did IVF, we know the extraction date of the eggs and when the embryo was put back in. So are they correct? Like, yes. Anyway, it turns out it's massive.
Yes, really. Like, it's in the very, very top percentile of baby
sizes.
Like
90%.
Yeah.
In the 90th percentile. Which when Carl said to me, you said it was a massive giant.
Oh, yeah.
And I thought, he said it was Massive Janet. So that's her current nickname, Massive Janet. Massive Janet has, she asked me, you know, did you look at your results from last time? I was like, no. And then I looked the other day when we came home and on all the scales, like, it's right up.
Yeah.
It's right up in the high end. And there's something about the blood fresh blood stuff that was where one of the readings was right off the chart because they measure the blood pressure and the blood like restriction or something like the pumping and the restriction but she was staring at it and she's like, everything looks fine to me, like it's
every
she's just
organ
a large
every
baby.
Limb every single thing, it looks perfect,
but
she's just massive,
and it's now alerting me that it's high risk. So she's like, but I don't understand why it's saying that because all the elements to me look fine. So I don't know why it's giving me that reading.
Yes.
And so she went to chat to someone else. And basically the outcome of that is, don't worry, but we've got more scans.
Wow.
Yeah.
So at this stage, I think I counted the other day. And I think if we get no more added in, apart from the ones we've had and the ones that are booked in, we will have had 12 scans
I know.
By the time she's born.
Delivery.
I think it's all the radiation from that. They're growing it bigger. So many scans. It's like the Incredible Hulk.
Yes. So, but it's also what she said, you know, if it's smaller, that's when you worry more that the baby's not growing properly.
Yes.
But I don't know, like, there was no kind of situation that she proposed for us of what might happen. Like,
no, she said
she just suddenly gets too massive, like she's too big.
Well, I think that was it. She said literally, like, she's from looking at even the fact that it's big and the thing saying like there's a risk, the risk wasn't to the baby. She was saying all the readings and everything she's looked at organ wise everything looks like the baby's absolutely fine.
Yeah,
she said, but the problem with having a big baby is starting to become a concern for the mother. Mm-hmm. So, and she also mentioned a gestational
diabetes
as a very small percentage, like there's a chance that it could be something like that you might at the 20, I think, are they going to test you for that?
Yeah, some next scan. Time? Yeah, 28 weeks maybe.
Yeah.
Which, you know, I do like sugar, but you don't think I eat crazy amounts of sugar?
No, I mean, I think you've got a really healthy diet. You just have the odd bit of sugar. There's going to be there's people whose diet would have so much more sugar than yours.
Yes.
Yeah.
But it might just be. You know, every case is different, isn't it? Yeah. Like, it's not, it's gestational diabetes, I think, can just happen to anyone.
Yeah.
It's where your body, well, I read up on it, obviously. Oh, mm-hmm. It's just where your body just starts processing the sugars differently. It's not mm-hmm. something that you're having too much, it's just it's not breaking it down properly. Mm-hmm. So it can happen to anyone.
Yeah.
But then that is something that, you know, is only a chance.
Yeah.
It?
Yeah. And obviously, it's amazing actually how well monitored. But yeah. I was thinking about that as well just yesterday, going, in the old days you would just get pregnant, have a couple of doctor's appointments, no scans or anything. They would sort of, I don't know, they would know that it's growing, probably measuring your stomach seeing how big you were, and then you would give birth and they all the things along the way. There'd be no measuring of what the limbs are like or what the heartbeat is like or whatever, anything of that. So this kind of, you know, really checking in, I guess it's why they're still, you know, there's so many scans in place, because they're still, I'm sure they're still figuring that stuff out.
And they're very thorough. And when I was expecting you, we had a few scans, but hardly any of my friends had scans because it was fairly unusual. But because you would always be in a difficult position and they would try to turn you and you never would and you'd go back again, the scans showed that that's where you were.
Yeah. And you mean friends over here, because you you were in London.
Correct.
At the time, and I was born here, just down the road actually.
Yes.
On Harrow Road.
That hospital was demolished.
Yeah. there was no babies to be born after this one. Yeah.
And what a hospital it was. It was St Mary's, attached to St Mary's Paddington, St Mary's Harrow Road.
Yeah.
And the pregnant mums were the only inhabitants, patients at the time. We were on two sort of wards levels, I believe. And quite a few of us were in there earlier, I guess, for gestational diabetes and other things.
Being geriatrics and stuff.
Well, yes, but no, just being sideways. And having sort of meals there, you were monitored with everything. And one time, just going in to have a lunch with a salad and what have you, there's a little worm on the lettuce sort of wriggling its way across the lettuce. So it wasn't a very hygienic place. It was extraordinary, and that's probably what was torn down.
But that's organic lettuce.
Well, it was.
Which you wouldn't get in hospital these days necessarily.
No.
Potentially it was more hygienic than lettuce that's been sprayed with all sorts of chemicals.
Yes, but I didn't eat it.
The worm?
No.
Did you eat the lettuce?
I don't think so.
Hello there.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Quickly, we haven't got long. Please listen to the all-new Angelos and Barry podcast.
It's a funny one.
Oh, my God, it's hilarious. There's so much muck in it.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads, generally, for most people, are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story.
In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
What did, like, because in your pregnancy, did you have cravings or what was your food like?
Well, I remember with the first one, because the one Leo.
With Leo.
I was very into tarama salata, and Mike was working up in Scotland quite a lot, and I knew there was a Greek restaurant down Finchley Road, so I'd walk down there and I'd get my tarama salata and I'd go back and eat it. I was working, of course, and I don't know whether that was then a cause, because they didn't tell you don't eat soft cheeses, don't eat this, don't eat that. You just ate normally. They didn't have any of those rules. And I think with you, I was probably more into fruity things, but I remember with Stephen, it was pizza. Yeah. And he loves pizza, so I really can't remember all the cravings that I might have had.
Yeah.
But I'm sure there were some.
Yeah.
I'd have to ask your dad, I think.
Yeah. Mm. Another episode. And in terms of, like, because at the moment, yeah, I'm just sorting out what clothes I'm wearing right now.
Mm-hmm.
The sort of clothes, like, you know, there's quite a fashion at the moment that you wear. You can wear tight stuff, but that was that.
Well, Laura Ashley was in fashion then, so I had a couple of Laura Ashley long dresses. I used to wear a lot of long dresses, so you couldn't really tell. So
is that because you were hiding it a little bit, or it wasn't?
No, I just think it was fashionable. That's what I liked wearing, some dresses.
Yeah.
Yes, I wasn't really into trousers, because when you were working in those days, you didn't wear jeans to work. You had to be more or less fairly smart, sort of 9-to-5 office type attire.
Yeah.
So you dressed accordingly.
And when you were pregnant with me, how long did you work until?
I think it was a couple of weeks before I went into hospital, so probably about 36 weeks. Because just before you were born, I worked at an organisation that arranged conferences.
Yeah.
And one of the conferences we did was at Leamington Spa, and it was a television broadcast for Channel 4 called Them and Us. And it was about sort of the office management versus shop floor workers. So people came in who held managerial positions in big companies, and then there were people who worked on the shop floor. And it was all televised. It was over about 5 days that this was going on. It's a very sort of grand spa place. And I just had the admin job. You had to welcome people as they arrived, so I was pretty gross and big. Hello, welcome. You know, your bedroom's along there, or morning tea will be at such and such a time. So that's what I was doing up until about 36 weeks.
Yeah.
So you were already on television.
Yeah.
And it was shown on TV, and I remember just the settings, because they'd have the rooms all set up with the cameras and the cameramen and all the people who go along with it, and the guys that I worked with, they'd be there, the bosses, putting their heads in their hands and thinking and contemplating and discussing what was going on within the group. And as soon as they'd finish that session, I'd have to have the morning tea all ready. They'd bring it up for me to serve and say, here you are, cup of tea, sugar, biscuit. And it was always the cameramen and all those people who came first to be fed, not the ones who'd been sitting sweating under the lights. But it was quite an interesting series, and it was done over, I don't know, 4 or 6 weeks or something, shown on Channel 4.
Yeah. So, yeah, I was on TV when I was inside my mum's tummy, and now my daughter's going to be on stage inside my stomach.
That's cool. Yes.
With my mum.
Yes.
The three generations of us
there. Isn't that lovely?
Yes. Yeah, it is. It's weird. And it's like, the interesting thing with the show is that when we first performed it last year, that pregnancy and that idea about not being sure if I was going to become pregnant or if that would happen ever, and if there would be anyone after me, was a big part of the show. And obviously that's happened in the meantime.
Magic. So,
yeah. Well, yeah, I do think that partly from us talking about it and sort of it becoming a conversation and not something hidden not something hidden, that helped make it happen in a way.
Yeah.
Thanks for my help.
Yeah, thanks for your help. Thanks for your help. Carl, was there anything that you had that you wanted to ask about?
Well, I don't know. Like, how was, I mean, obviously, Michael, your husband, my father-in-law, Hannah's dad.
Yes.
How was he during the pregnancy?
My pregnancy?
Yeah.
Well, always very caring. Yes. And yes, he's always been a good cook. I don't know, he was working very hard as well. We both just worked.
Yeah.
And yes, I think he was just always there because he didn't know any more than I did.
Yeah, because obviously, it's, I mean, in terms of the, when people think about those times compared to now, mm-hmm. like it's almost like you sort of assume it would all be very much more traditional roles. But like mm-hmm. the dads didn't take much.
Well, he didn't come along to hospital appointments, and I can remember having to catch the tube from Swiss Cottage to Paddington. You'd have to change it wherever it
Baker
was.
Street.
Baker Street, yeah, yeah. Yes, somewhere like that. And people never stood up for you on the tube.
Really?
You might be going for an early appointment. And that, I found that really tedious because you were feeling tired and you think, why don't they stand up? Now and you can have those badges, baby on board.
Yeah, yeah. Which Hannah's still refusing to wear.
Really?
Yeah.
Too embarrassed. I think you're now at a point you should, you could, I mean,
I
you
still don't need to. I haven't
it's
been
visible. I know, but I mean, it's visible now.
Traveling, yes.
Yeah, I haven't needed to use it.
No, but Mike was very caring about everything. So
his advice to you was about preparing for a siege.
Yes,
yes.
Which someone else was saying the other day that idea when people say to you, you've got to do batch cooking.
Yeah,
just going, oh yeah, sure. But how helpful and useful that really is to have all those things in the house once the time comes.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm.
And I was a cesarean as well.
Yes. You were going to be born naturally.
Yeah.
And they'd set the date for Friday the 14th of December. And I suppose it's on the 12th. I was feeling sick and I was throwing up and my back was aching, but I didn't have any labour pains or anything like that. I just felt yuck. And so they'd keep coming along. They'd do those monitor things. They'd put them on your tummy the whole time. And they were constantly doing that the whole time I was in there and I'd no idea what they were doing. But obviously they were just checking heartbeats and so forth.
Yeah.
And then they suddenly said, emergency cesarean. And
wow.
So that sort of happened. Rather than saying you were due on a date, you were actually delivered that day the 12th.
So you don't know why they suddenly declared emergency cesarean.
Well, because I guess you were getting stressed or something because you couldn't come out sideways. I don't know.
I couldn't elbow
Where's
my
the
way.
Hole? And my cervix never went sort of very far open either.
The dilation.
Stephen, whatever it is, yeah. Dilation.
Yeah.
See, I don't even know the terms.
No, I've only just learnt that because from reading stuff, really. the dilation of the cervix. But I think Dad remembers the numbers of the dilation of your cervix.
Yes, well, he's a statistician.
Statistician, yeah. And I've been working. I've been doing full-time work the past 3 weeks, which...
Exhausting.
Yeah, exhausting. But I finished that now and we get into rehearsing and working on the show a bit more. So at the moment, I have been when I've been driving, I started blaring Radio 3 to
for
get
music.
Some classical music into my uterus because it's supposed to be good for babies. And I think that the thing that I learned about the way that, because they can hear and they respond to sort of changes in pitch is it's much more, rather than sort of speaking on one tone, it's all the changes that when they hear it, when they're talking quietly and softly. And that's sort of the melody of speech is what they can tune into.
What do you
more.
That baby show we watched that was on BBC, what was that called?
Yeah, that one.
It was really good. They did this show where they did loads of psychological experiments, makes it sound really sinister, but actually it was really fun little experiments with babies up to like sort of, you know, toddler age to sort of see what stages they develop certain skills. And they did a test in language and you know, sort of baby speak when adults talk to babies and they do like beep, 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 beep.
Yes.
Apparently babies actually respond much better to that exact thing, the sort of shifting tones and the higher pitched bits. And because if you just speak quite monotone, babies just, it's boring, isn't
they just
it?
Hit
yeah. Whereas actually, there's the reason baby speech developed was because that's how we develop language.
The rhythmical bit.
Yeah, yes. It's meant to be a bit of fun and.
Yeah, but mainly, it's the melody of it, isn't it? And that's what, like, putting the classical music on, I can hear that much more in the music than kind of more modern, modern sounds.
That's some crazy experimental jazz.
Oh yeah, that's going to do something for sure.
Yes.
I haven't found that radio channel though.
Yes, I don't think there is a freeform jazz dab radio station.
I think Carl Donnelly could be hosting that in a few years' time.
You're welcome to DAB Jazz FM.
Well, I think you were probably rhythmical because I worked in an office the time when the word processor, actually the golf ball typewriter, so you'd be hearing a lot of tapping going on, so that's probably why you're so good at tap dancing. Or used to be.
Developed good rhythm.
I do have good rhythm, yeah. Mm. I did tap dancing from the age of
five
till 11.
Oh, is that all?
Yeah.
Gosh, they're the founding years.
But Mum's done it ever since I was five until now.
Yes.
35 years. That's why you're so good at tap dancing.
I can't do wings, though, and things like that. But that's all right. If you learn those when you're little, you can still do them when you're older.
Yeah.
Technique.
Do you know, I had a sexist thought today.
Did you?
Yeah, my friend David Quirk.
Yes.
He's a comedian in Australia. He has a skateboard with his name on it, which I've wanted to get since they came out last year. I don't skate, but I was like, I'd love just a David Quirk skateboard because that's a really awesome thing to have because I love him. And today I saw someone post a picture of one on Instagram and I was like, if we were having a boy, I would get that.
Still have it for a girl.
Exactly. Yeah. But I had that sexist thought. Prior to that, I hadn't thought about getting that skateboard for our child.
Yeah.
Even though I think that girl skaters are the cool. Yes. I always wanted to be one. I think they're the coolest, but I didn't because I didn't want to hurt myself. So that's why.
Well, you said what sort of cool clothes I can now purchase.
Yes.
You know, and I said tracksuits. Like little girls in tracksuits is well cool, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's a little Adidas tracksuit. Yeah. Yes.
And I think we've started receiving offers of clothing and things
like that.
Hand-me-downs. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I actually picked – oh, that was another thing this week. I think I mentioned the builder who's been working with us at the studio, he had a pushchair that he needed to get rid of in his garage. And he'd said he was going to bring it in for me. And I was out the other day doing some stuff and I came back into the office and it was set up on my desk, just sitting there. Aww. And I saw it. And then I just didn't know how to operate it or move it, take it down.
Fold it.
Take the brake off, fold it.
But you tell me it's more of a, you know, it's not for
It's newborns. For later, yeah. It's kind of for when they're 3, 4. And also because it's not parent-facing and I really want a parent-facing pushchair when they're little.
Well, but I think we've got enough time to work out how to set it up, is what I'm saying.
You can get out of the car and have a go in a little bit.
So do you mean 3, 4 years old or months?
3, 4 years old.
Be walking by then.
Yeah, but when you take them out and they don't want to walk.
No, they walk.
Then you force them to walk.
Yes. You carry them on your shoulders. I can remember having to push Stephen in a pusher and you'd be on my shoulders. It was killing.
But I also remember going out walking and Stephen being in the pushchair.
Yeah, well, you were 3 years older than him.
Yeah, but he was two. He was old enough to walk. as far as I was concerned.
5 and he was 2.
We both started walking at 9 months. So
yes. That's heaven good. Help you.
Good. I don't know how old I was when I started walking, but I started reading at a scary age.
Gosh.
Like I was reading long before school. Like my parents, and they sort of taught me, but they said I just picked it up. So I'd read the newspaper that my parents would buy when I was like 4 years old.
My brother did that too.
It's so weird, isn't it? I must have been I was a creepy little kid looking back.
No, you weren't.
I was advanced. No, but I mean, I used to obsess about death and stuff like that. So I was quite a, you know.
You're deep.
Yes.
You're deep. An old man.
I was an old man in a young man's body.
Old soul.
Yes.
The other thing with the massive Janet that that's inside me, I said I was 9 pounds 11, but that's incorrect.
You were just 9 pounds. Yes.
But still a big baby. Like most people have kind of 6 pounds 7.
That's right.
Babies.
Yes.
Yeah.
So and 9 pounds is.
Yes.
And Stephen was 9'4" and I was 9'4".
Yeah. Right.
Yes.
And Carl has a massive niece.
Yeah, she's big.
Yeah.
So maybe it's just it. The next generation is going to be massive.
Yeah.
We're creating giants.
I don't know, because still some people have smallish babies. They measure them in kilos.
I'm talking about
the super child.
The super kid.
That's growing right now.
Yes.
So I've changed my mind. I'm going to get a David Quirk skateboard for her.
Good.
Definitely.
Is that to be a baby present, or when you're out there you'll buy it, or what do you do? Uh-huh.
Bring it back in the luggage.
And get, ride it back. Get her on it from about 18 months.
That's, yeah. If she's not going to walk, she has to skate. No pushchairs.
Yeah.
Are you going to use reins?
I don't think
What's reins?
Where you have a little harness on.
I don't feel like...
Oh, well, I knew that I did it with Stephen because often you'd catch a tube. We didn't have a car or anything, so you'd have to catch a bus or catch a tube. It was much safer to have him on reins holding Hannah's hand.
Yeah.
When I was going through some old photos recently, I discovered Hannah was also on reins. Oh. So I thought that wasn't a sexist thing just from the point of view of having a little boy on them, but it's just control of a child.
Yeah.
Because they're so quick. You can be looking at your phone, though we didn't have them then, but you just have to always be aware that they're going to just escape.
Yes.
Yeah. I kind of thought that was the reins was a thing from the past, but I saw a photo of some friends who've got their...
Oh, I still see people on them all the time. Yeah. That's quite common.
Well, they say it's sort of child cruelty now, so that you shouldn't do it. But I think from a safety point of view, it's very wise.
Well, I'd say if you're strapping a kid into a pushchair, they're still restrained, aren't they? You know what I mean? I think I wouldn't see there being any difference between the two.
Yeah.
But they're also walking and you're tiring them out.
I mean, but the one we're growing, I mean, there probably won't be reins strong enough to hold them.
Yeah.
You're like a horse and carriage.
Yeah. Oh, and the other thing, you said this morning that Dad had sent an email because he was worried that he'd upset
you two. I don't know why. I think he may have dreamt it. He said that George, the dog, had woken him up 3 times in the night because I'm not there to sort of say, come up here, George.
Yeah.
And I think Stephen's gone away for a bucks night because one of his friends is getting married in a week's time.
Yes.
So Dad and George were alone in the house together. And George obviously thought, where's Mummy? Where's Stephen? Oh, Daddy's there. I'll go up and wake him up. But he also said in his comment
George
in
the
email.
George is a dog, did we say that?
That the fact that he woke up and he was worried that he'd upset you too. So I don't know any more than that. But you're constantly on his mind.
Well, that was because yesterday I decided we would tell him the gender before told you.
Oh, you're always doing that.
No, I thought it was the other way around. No. That he would...
Well, you told him that you sent him something first before you sent it to me.
You probably didn't look at you. Maybe I'm just conscious of that.
No.
Because I know, because I've been doing a show with you, so he feels left out.
I know.
So I thought I'd tell him first, and I thought maybe I'd film the reaction in case it was good.
Oh, yes.
What did he say? He was just like...
Another one.
Oh, another one.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Oh, another one of them. It's, yeah. Like, it's really...
I was like...
No wonder. Because the thing was, when we were expecting you, Hannah, his parents had already 8 nieces, granddaughters. Yeah. So they'd never had a grandson. So I thought, oh, we'll have a boy maybe. We'll be special. And when I was at the hospital for those 12 days, whatever, beforehand, one of the nurses put wedding rings and wave them over your tummy. And one of them said, oh, yes, it's a boy. It's a boy. And I thought, oh, really? I was so excited. And then, of course, we had a girl. I was so disappointed. No, I wasn't really.
That is news that has not been shared with me until now.
And then when Stephen did come along, his parents couldn't have cared less. There was sort of...
Oh, they're same.
Yeah, there was nothing special.
Oh. But it was a boy.
Yeah.
Just I was trying to think, because Dad said, well, I thought so, because my mum, all her offspring, they have girls. And I was like, it's actually nothing to do. Like, it's Carl who... The sperm has the X or the Y chromosome that decides whether it's a girl or a boy.
Thank you, Carl.
Thank you.
So you that was you giving me an X with my ex. And I've been thinking about that logic and I don't know why. So that's why he thought he upset me. But we weren't upset at all. I thought it was funny.
Yeah.
So Dad, don't worry, he didn't upset us
much.
At all.
No, at all.
Don't be a stirrer.
Yeah.
So maybe on that note.
We might wrapping it up.
Yeah. Leave it.
Wrap it up.
Do you feel... Mum, is there any advice you think you should give me?
Oh, I've got a little article that I wish I'd known before I had you, but I'd have to find that and read it out. But it's just,
okay.
Don't look at your phones. Look at the baby. Just concentrate all your energy on them.
Okay.
I've just bought a book that I hopefully will have got mostly through by the next episode, which is called... I've got it here. It's... Hold On To Your Kids. And it's it's by Dr. Gordon Newfield and Gabor Maté.
Mm-hmm.
And Gabor Maté I've watched TED Talks of him. He's amazing. Uh-huh. He does a lot to do with addiction. And this book, it sounds good. It's about how to make yourself sort of just how to be a good parent and in the right way in the modern age, rather than let your kids sort of be too influenced by peer pressures.
Oh yes.
So that one, I, it's one. I'm back on the parenting books.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What are you reading at the moment?
I'm reading one called Chasing the Scream, which is why what inspired.
Which
me
could be about parenting.
Well, it's about addiction.
Yeah.
And so. Yeah, it's more about drug addiction, but it's in it. Oh, that's what inspired this. There's a good chunk about Gabor Mate. He's done loads about addiction. So it's I'm done with that. I read another book before that that led me onto that, and now I'm coming back to parenting.
But you were also going to, I saw you pick up the one by Professor.
Oh, it's a big one.
So Carl bought a book which is written by Addie, who I went to primary school with.
Oh,
Addie
yes.
Leff.
Yes, yes.
His mum,
yes.
Who's like
Joan.
Raphael Left.
Raphael
Left.
Yes, yes.
So Carl arrived one day and I was like, that's Addie's mum.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But it's so thick it's and
a
scientific.
Big scientific, yes. Like psychology of
was she at the
parenting.
Tavistock? No, don't know.
I can't remember. Yes.
Yeah. Mum's actually got this thing in front of her that
it's
she wanted
to
share.
It's by Diane Lumens. Mm-hmm. If I had my child to raise all over again, I'd build self-esteem first and the house later. I'd finger paint more and point the finger less. I would do less correcting and more connecting. I'd take my eyes off my watch and watch with my eyes. I would care to know less and know to care more. I'd take more hikes and fly more kites. I'd stop playing serious and seriously play. I would run through more fields and gaze at more stars. I'd do more hugging and less tugging. I'd see the oak in the acorn more often. I would be firm less often and affirm much more. I'd model less about the love of power and more about the power of love.
It's nice.
Aww.
There
Thanks,
you go.
Mom. I thought you might have cried during that, but you managed to.
No. Just massive
you managed
Janet.
To hold off. Yeah. that's going out to massive Janet. So thank you very much for doing a podcast with us. How was it?
It was fun. I enjoyed
fun.
It. Yeah.
Fun.
I was going to say scary, but no, it was fun.
But you have to start your own now, you and Michael.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to the next one now.
You could do a grandparents podcast.
Yeah, or two vegan idiots guest.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
A vegan one.
Yeah.
I don't think I should let you meet Julian.
Although you have been drinking oat milk since
delicious.
You first got here.
Yes.
That is good.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, we might have a convert.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you for being here, Mum. Thank you, Carl. Thank you for listening. And do remember, get in touch with us, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, at Cheggers Pod. We'll see you next week. Bye.
GreatBigOwl.com.
Heavy Pencil, a new comedy from Great Big Owl, the people who brought you Brian and Roger.
Are you a client?
Yes, I'm a client. I'm the actor Michael Cork.
The Observer called it a lovely thing, wonderfully funny, pitched perfectly, produced with a light touch.
No. I've been taken on as Fliss's assistant.
You're the assistant's assistant.
Yes, if you like.
Heavy Pencil by Anna Crilly and Tony Gardner.
Great Big Owl.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Want to join a film club that has real frank discussions, talking about films that you actually want to watch?
Well, then look no further, because we are Frank Film Club with me, Maisie Williams. And each week we watch a film and then come together and obsess over it, or sometimes absolutely slate it. Either way, there's always a lot to say. And the films that we pick range all the way from like 90s and noughties classics, all the way up to new releases that are coming out every single week. And sometimes we get our listeners to pick for us.
And we all work in the film industry, don't we, ladies?
Indeed.
So we really love to look at specifically how a film was made.
So if this sounds like your bag, then come and have a listen to Frank Film Club. And remember, absolutely everyone is welcome in this club.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.